Welcome to the Giants Talk Podcast. Here's Alex Pavlovich and Cole Kuiper. I know those guys.
Hi, everyone. I'm Cole Kuiper, and welcome to Giants Talk. As always, I'm here with Giants insider Alex Pavlovich, and we're ready to talk a little Giants baseball. As you know, Giants Talk comes to you every Monday and Thursday right here on the NBC Sports Podcast Network, and we're brought to you by Wendy's. Get yourself a $1.99 honey butter chicken biscuit today. You won't regret it. They're quite delicious.
You won't regret it. Trust me. You will not. We've tried them. You won't regret it.
We have. We have. And $1.99 is about as cheap as you can get for a breakfast sandwich. So go on and get it. But we're mostly here, when we're done talking about food, is to talk about baseball. Giants went 3-3 on this road trip, took 2 out of 3 in Philadelphia. And I don't know, dude. Like, I feel like I should be upset after this most recent game. I should be upset that they didn't win more on the road trip. But I'm kind of stoked. I'm feeling upbeat. I'm feeling positive. And I think the team looks really good. We're not getting blown out. We're losing close games. And that sounds like a negative, but I'm kind of spinning it as a positive in my head.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't agree with Angel Pagano on a lot of things, but he kind of coined happy flight, which has become a thing over the years. And this doesn't count because they lost and they got walked off. But it does go in a little bit that, like, these road trips are interesting because it kind of depends how it's, like, how you do it. Like, they go out and they lose the first two. Their closer gets beat for the first time. It's really depressing. Buster gets hit. And then they win 3 straight. And then, you know, even the last game in Philadelphia, I mean, not a great way to end it. But I think, you know, they could reason that they were behind in that game. Darren Ruff hit a huge home run. A lot of things went wrong. And they're right there. So it is an interesting thing where, like, 3-3 can go a million different ways depending on how you do it. I think they're probably feeling kind of okay. I will say, somebody who was not as enthusiastic as you were in that intro, and we're going to throw the sound in here. Gabe Kapler was asked about 3-3, and here's what he had to say.
And I thought we played, you know, some good baseball, and I think our offense, obviously, in this series began to gel a little bit and show the type of firepower that we have. At the same time, I think there's better baseball in us, and I'm never going to be satisfied with going 3-3 on a road trip. I'm pleased that we won this series and look forward to getting home and taking on Miami. And I think there are some good things that happened, but, you know, not gonna you know, cheer too loudly for a 3-3 trip.
So there you have the manager. Probably not. It doesn't sound like he was going to have too many celebratory drinks on the way home from Philadelphia after taking a series from his old team. But I thought for him it was good. You know, first 3 days back, it went pretty well.
Yeah.
And he did a nice job, you know, especially the first couple games of managing a bullpen that right now, you know, you have guys who are overworked. You have McGee, who was out for a couple days. I think he probably made Phillies fans be like, you know, wasn't necessarily him. The bullpen was an issue before him. The bullpen's a bigger issue after he left.
Yeah, he's just inviting the Phillies owners to fly out to San Francisco and talk to him again, because I think he had himself a very nice showing. I think what went wrong in the loss towards the end of the series wasn't really his fault. And I don't know. I will say Gabe and I are probably completely opposites in terms of what will satiate us. You know, I'm completely like, oh, I ate something mildly healthy today. I'm calling today's day a win. Whereas Gabe's much more strict. He knows what he's doing. He knows what he wants, and he gets it. I'm way more willing to settle for a 500 road stand.
Yeah, I think, like, most Giants fans, if they went 81-81, would be like, okay, that was, you know, not the worst. But look, rightfully, they have higher expectations there. So it's interesting because when you're on the outside, sometimes you look at it and, like, I've started to look at this team, and this is something we will for sure talk about over the summer and be like, these guys kind of look like they have the ability to hang around a little bit. At the same time, they could clean up at the trade deadline, especially with their starting pitchers, if they were not in a good position. So it's a little bit like when Farhan took over and had a really tough decision to make with Bumgarner and Will Smith his first year at the deadline, because the team all of a sudden went nuts after they got Alex Dickerson. But internally, they never view it that way. So we're sitting on the outside thinking about things like this, and internally they're like, man, 3-3, not a good trip.
Yeah, and I will say, it seems like the past couple of years we've really heated up leading into the trade deadline, and because of that, we haven't sold as much as some fans have wanted us to, if we really want to lean into this rebuild, and then end up obviously not doing anything and getting cold as soon as the trade deadline happens. So I don't know, maybe this is the year they go all in. I think that was one of my predictions right at the beginning of the year, is that one of our starters is gone.
Yeah, I mean, the way they've been pitching, like four of them would be gone if they, you know, because they look, it's hard to find starting pitching at the deadline, and they have all these guys on 1-year deals who have been unbelievable to start the year. But we will have a whole summer to talk trade deadline.
Well, one guy I can guarantee is not being traded anywhere is Buster Posey. And I wanted to bring him up because he had that fantastic 2-home run game, and it just felt like it was, 2012 again all of a sudden. And Buster Posey was his young, spry self. I can see from some camera angles he's getting a little quite handsome salt and pepper up in his sides of his head. But nonetheless, it was shades of young MVP rookie of the year Buster Posey.
You know what's fun? This was maybe I think 3-4 years ago. I'm interviewing Buster one time, and he stops me in the middle of a question. We're just in the clubhouse. And he, for people watching on YouTube, I have the salt and pepper coming in as well. And we're similar ages, and we're in a similar trajectory in terms of the salt and pepper. And he looks at me and he stops my interview and he goes, "When did you start getting white hairs in your temples? And when did you, and I was like, "Well, it's from covering this team that, you know, we just went through 2016 and now it's old age." But yeah, he's starting to get it. But I think, you know, he's come back after that year off, and he looks like he's, if you take away the temples, he looks like he is 26, 27. I'm not stunned by a lot of things that happen on the baseball field. I was pretty stunned that he hit that 98 mile per hour fastball from Zach Wheeler that was up and it was in and it wasn't a strike, and Buster just yanked it down the line for a second homer of the game. That was like a vintage MVP type of swing. So it shows you what it's capable of when he's right physically. And I think it tells us a little bit about, those years when he wasn't right physically. And maybe he's one guy who will never, ever, ever tell you that something is wrong. And I wonder, 10 years from now, if he would admit, how much pain he was in before he had hip surgery, and the amount of strength that he has gained since he had that surgery. So those swings have been impressive. And just the home runs he's hit this year, I mean, they've all been legitimate home runs. He has four of them. And there's none of them where you just go, oh, yeah, he poked one over the wall in right field at Coors Field. These were blasts. I think we'll see if he can do it for 6 months, because, again, it's hard when you're a catcher, and we've already seen him in the spring with the hip and then also got hit by a pitch. But right now, I mean, he's turning back the clock.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that tell-all from President Buster Posey, where he talks about, his years in pain before he bounced back and won MVP in 2021.
Don't have high hopes of that. I would love to write that autobiography. Don't have high hopes that he will be spilling everything.
Well, I have one of my close friends, Sean Jordan, over at Bleacher Report, insists to this day that Buster Posey has the prettiest swing in baseball. And it's swings like that that make me think he's right for the first time in his life.
Yeah, it just looks so easy. And it just, it's one of those swings where when you watch it a second time and see that the pitch was 98, it just doesn't really make sense. But look, as Alex Dickerson said, he's back right now. For sure, right now Buster's back. We'll see what happens over the course of the year. But here in April, he has been back.
One thing I wanted to touch on that I thought was kind of funny, if people listening didn't know, going into this most recent series, Kapler was 199 and 200 managerially, meaning he was one win away from being exactly 500 at 200 and 200. And Giants won and got him to that perfect neutral point. Now, since then, the Giants have won and they've lost. So he's still at 500. He's that, to quote Futurama, what makes a man turn neutral like that? And I think it's perfectly indicative of his career right now. And I'm pretty stoked that he's there, because you just hear about how much Kapler struggled in Philly and was just like a bust in Philly. And the Giants obviously haven't done a ton since he got here in Sacramento, yet he's still hanging there around the 500 mark.
Yeah, it's hard to do as a manager, especially when you do it a long time, because those losing seasons, they really make a dent. But if you think about it, like, he got fired from his first job and then he took over a team that in theory was rebuilding. So to be at 500 at that point, I think he'll take it. I think he should take it. I mean, they had a little bit of a toast in the clubhouse when they got to 200. And I know coaches and players felt good about him just hitting that milestone. It was a big night for people reaching 200, as we'll talk about a little bit later with your dad. But yeah, it's a good point. I think given where he's been as a manager and the jobs he's had, they've had very high expectations in Philadelphia and probably not fully rightfully so. So a chance for him, I mean, if he sticks around and gets to really see this thing through, he may look up in a few years and be like, I've got a pretty good record here.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, Boach retired just a shade under 500, like 20 games or something. And I think he was just a game or two under 500 with the Giants. I'm not like that knowledgeable about advanced metrics and advanced statistics, but does that mean Gabe is a better manager than Boach? Alex, your thoughts.
You could use that one. Yeah, Bruce Bochy was 2003 wins, 2029 losses, and he was two games under 500 with the Giants. Yeah, we could look at that. We could look back at that 2019 at the end there and be like, come on, guys. You couldn't have gotten him. I know that was something. Look, it's something they're aware of, no matter what they tell you. I know he was aware of that. 2017 kind of put Bochy in a hole where it was hard for him to – the teams he had at the end there, it was hard for him. He wasn't going to have a chance to make up and get back to 500. Maybe he'll come back and do it. We'll see. But it is something that matters to managers.
Well, we'll check back in 1,800 games to see if Kapler has reached that same milestone.
We will see.
We will see. I also wanted to talk a little bit about our young, fire-throwing relief pitcher, Duvall. He looked good. He's got three appearances in the last 4 days, which is pretty astounding for a kid his age. You think that's kind of getting to him? I mean, he gave up that very loud, although it wasn't that deep, home run to Harper, which kind of seemed like his welcome to the big leagues slap on the back of the head moment. But what do you think? Is he going to bounce back well from that?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he bounced back well during the game, but he has an ERA now. So that's at some point it was going to happen. I think the most interesting thing for me, and look, on Wednesday they were without Tyler Rogers and without Jake McGee because both those guys have pitched a ton. But Duvall has been right. Like, he's not pitching the fifth inning. He's not coming in to get an out in the sixth after somebody else has gotten two outs. He's pitching the seventh. He's pitching the eighth. He is very clearly, you know, short of falling apart, somebody who is here to stay and somebody who has kind of leapfrogged half of the bullpen in less than a week.
I read this online and I wish I could credit who tweeted it, but someone said now that he's pitched three times in 4 days, he only pitched three times in 5 days once in his minor league career. Now, feel free to jump into my mentions and say I'm spreading fake news because that's completely not true, but I read that somewhere. And I thought that was pretty cool that they're relying on him that heavily this early, and he's arguably out of his comfort zone, but pitching very, very well.
That sounds about right. He probably pitched once every 5 days in spring training in the alternate site the last couple of years, just because they've been so careful with guys. But if you're going to give up a home run, and if you're going to give up a run, and it's a home run to Bryce Harper, who just absolutely has terrorized the Giants since deciding not to take their $310 million. I looked this up during the game today. He's played them 10 times since choosing the Phillies, and he's reached base 24 times in those 10 games. He has three home runs, has walked 13 times, obviously scored the tying run and the winning run on Wednesday. So he enjoys facing the Giants. And I think, you know, the silver lining here is that he chose to go to Philadelphia, where not only does it not look like he's going to be in a race anytime soon, but the Giants don't have to see him very often. So be happy he didn't choose the Dodgers, be happy he didn't choose the Padres, where I thought all along he should have gone. He went to Philadelphia, and I guess we'll see him twice a year, and he'll be a menace, and that'll be that.
You know, I know he's a Las Vegas kid. As soon as I realized the Giants were out of the mix, I was for sure thought he was going to end up in Southern California. Just seemed like a natural fit. So, like you said, very relieved he chose, for some reason, the city of Philadelphia, where they have rain delays, bad weather, and, like, weird food over San Diego. But, hey, dude, you do you.
Yeah, you and I are big San Diego fans. He could have been right there in the middle of that. San Diego City, San Diego food and nightlife fans, I should say. But the team's fun too. But yeah, he could have been right there in the middle of that and decided on Philadelphia. So,
not to preach Harper too much, but there was also one more Harper stat I wanted to throw out there because I thought it was very impressive. And that was every one of his home runs this year, this season, 2021, have either given the Phillies the lead or given the Phillies the tie. So dude's not just hitting home runs in runaway games or when they're behind by a lot. He's actually hitting meaningful hits and only meaningful hits. Good for him.
Yeah, he likes big spots. And
he does. You know,
another reason why
I would say my reaction to a road trip being where the Giants go 500 being a good thing is probably an overreaction. Would you call it that?
I think you were pretty excited. You and Gabe Kapler balanced each other out at the beginning of our podcast. But it is, we want to do something new here, which is something I'm borrowing it from Matt Maiocco.
He's
done his 49ers overreactions during the season. And I asked some of my Instagram followers for their bold takes after the Giants went 3-3 on the road trip. They're 11-7 to start the year. So we're going to run through some of those quickly. And also thank you to everybody who listens, as we say all the time, and pays attention to what we do. But I know some of these people and some of the people who ask questions are people we've both heard from on social media as well. The first one from Nikki TKV, her reaction to the start of the year is we could maybe be in this if we still had a bullpen. Technically, they have a bullpen. It hasn't been great the whole time, but they have a bullpen. What is your reaction to her reaction?
Well, my reaction is surely she's upset about the home bullpens not being on the third baseline anymore. So she just has to see that they're in center field. They're still there. Don't worry, Nikki. We have a bullpen.
Two of them. They have two really reliable relievers too, and Jake McGee and Tyler Rogers and Camilo Duvall maybe.
You know what?
Wandy Peralta's been hit and miss. They don't really throw Cale Berger in big spots, but he's been pretty good. So, like, there's the makings of a group there. And I do think we're going to see Kervin Castro and Gregory Santos this year as well. So, they have the pieces. And Dominic Leone maybe is somebody who helps out. They have the pieces to have a bullpen that can keep the Giants in the race.
I get what she's saying, though. We have a few games that we would have won had the bullpen not had some issues. But also, what, are we not in this? We may be in this if we had a bullpen. Come on, we're in like second place in the NL West.
Not
what
everybody
do you want.
But we'll get to that. Not everybody is as hyped as you are. So this one, there's a lot of bullpen questions, so I asked for it. This one's from Gome Babe at Gome Babe. Their bold take is that Jake McGee will not be the closer by the end of May. Cole Kiper, what do you say?
Disagree.
I disagree. There's only one other choice, and it's Tyler Rogers. So you're saying Rogers is going to supplant him, or something? You know, knock on wood that nothing happens to Jake. But
if that was what they were implying, then I'm heavily offended by this question. But yeah, I don't think he's struggling in a way that we should be worried about his position with the team. And also, who is there to replace Jake McGee? I mean, we've got our Limp Bizkit on deck whenever he comes in, and I'm still getting psyched.
It's been, the closer life's tough, man. You start the year with six unbelievable performances. Everybody's talking about you. You have a couple shaky games and all of a sudden people are out. So, but this one, you will like this one. This one is from LL Stu J 1992. Somebody who's younger than you and I says the Giants will finish second in the NL West.
LL Stu J, I agree. Let's just do it. Giants are second in the NL West. My only other tweak on it will be that we finish second to like the Rockies and just let those other two teams
now
hang out
control.
In the dumpster.
We've lost control.
I mean, look, realistically, that would be great. That's an overreaction I'm second. Totally cool with. But if we're even in the hunt for second, this is going to be a really exciting season.
Yeah, just hanging around the Padres would be a win, I think, in a big step forward for the organization, just given that they were the offseason winners and they're, you know, a couple years ahead of the Giants in terms of a farm rebuild. So Enjoy it right now. I will say this is a good time to mention that Denelson LeMay came out of the game today after 29 pitches. He had a PRP injection in the offseason to try to avoid Tommy John, and now looks like he's going to have Tommy John, which is just unbelievably brutal for that organization. Clevinger had Tommy John. LeMay probably is going to have it. And then Adrian Morahone, who we've seen a couple times this year, had it or will have it. So just really bad luck for a team that's gone all in. And I feel kind of bad for them because I like when people go all in. More people should go all in.
You want to see it pay up.
We'll see. I think, yeah, we'll see if the Giants, we'll check back in a month, see what second place looks like. The last one here also has to do with injuries. It is from the Phenom Junior. I wonder if there was a Phenom Senior. He says a couple of injuries and we're done. If not, we're a solid 85 plus wins. I actually don't like, I think on the surface, I think you would probably think that's an overreaction. I actually don't. I think it's a pretty solid roster. And people who've been listening to us for a couple months know that my main concern about this team has been, I think it's an older roster and a group that's going to have injuries and just currently is not built to make up for those injuries, especially in the rotation. And, you know, we're seeing it now. Cueto gets hurt and you start to get a little bit thinner. Logan Webb struggled when he took that spot. There's really nothing behind him right now. So you start to get thinner. And then I don't know if this is, I have to think this is a little bit related to age, that we saw Solano, Belt, and Crawford in a span of about 24 hours all kind of have muscle things. So Belt was okay. He had a tight quad. He was able to play. We think Crawford will be okay. There wasn't much info on that. But Donovan Solano is going to be out for a little bit. So it's a team in their 30s. I think the injuries are going to limit what they can do. But if they manage to stay healthy for the whole year, 85 wins wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, we keep talking about how this team has so much depth, but it seems like it's depth potential.
Yeah.
You know, like it's inexperienced guys who have a chance to do fantastic things if they're given a shot. But it's no guarantee, especially if we're having key players miss long periods of time. If we get hit with a few guys missing a week here, a week there, a couple times a year, I think that's still a very strong season. And we could maybe hit that just above 500 mark. But yeah, if we have a guy like Belt or Cueto go down hard this year, that's going to be dicey.
I think, and we got into this with your dad who's coming up, but when you see Solano go down and then you see Crawford get removed, all of a sudden you look around the middle of the infield and go like, oh, there's not a whole lot behind these starters. They'll be okay at second base, but shortstop, man, they cannot afford anything to happen.
No. I don't know. I know you're close with a lot of the beat writers from the different teams, but did you see the Philly guys try to drag a gnarly quote out of Gabe? Trying to get him to diss the team.
Don't blame this on a beat writer. I love the Philly beat has some of my favorite people just in terms of visiting beat writers, even though we don't see them very often. They're a fun crew, but this was a Howard Eskin, who's a local radio guy there. I think I don't even know if we have a comparison in the Bay Area. Like I think he's an East Coast shock jock basically. Like he tried pretty hard. You'll hear him here, what he tried to get from Gabe Kapler, who did not break.
Gabe, all right, I'm going to give you a little truth serum. I want the truth and nothing but the truth. Your first game back to Philadelphia, and you won your first game back. Obviously, you didn't play here last year. Really, really, what are your feelings winning for the first time back in Philadelphia?
Really, really, my feelings are I'm just kind of focused on doing a good job with the San Francisco Giants, and that's genuinely how I feel.
Really, and there's nothing even little a hint of emotion that was special with this win.
Not right now. It's I'm really focused on our club, Howard. I know that you'd like to have a different conversation, but that's where I am.
So yeah, I think he came in after the game and it was interesting. It was Gabe had to answer a lot of questions from Philly media for a couple of days, and it was different than what he usually is facing.
Now, I know you're not in there trolling players and managers like that, but have you had a question get just kind of shut down plain face like that hard in the interview room?
I troll quietly, so like only one person hears it. So I say something and Crawford's the only one who heard it. And we're both like, okay, that was, I have. I don't know that Bruce Bochy's ever done it to me. And I actually haven't covered Gabe Kapler in person. So which is weird the last couple of years, but I've had that a couple times. The one that stands out, this was a long time ago. Everybody knows how fiery Ryan Vogelsong is. I think it was a Giants Dodgers game late in the year and they lost like 1-0 or 2-1, something like that. He pitched well. It was a big game for the Giants. And it was a big loss for him. And I remember I asked him a couple questions and he gave me one word answers like, no. And just, nice. It was like the whole thing probably lasted like a minute 15 or something like that. Just the whole, cause after that, everybody's like, okay, well, this is awkward. Nobody else wants to. Some nights this used to happen a lot. Now it's a younger beat crew, but a lot of times when Henry and Andy were off, you'd have all these like backups there with me who were like college kids and didn't know these guys. So I think that was one of those nights where that was the case. And I asked the first couple of questions and got one word answers and just that famous Ryan Vogelsong glare. And everybody else was like, well, I want no part of this. So that was that. But there's a postscript to this. I'm driving home that night and Ryan's wife, Nicole, who's awesome, we all know, she sent me a message on Twitter and she's like, Ryan feels terrible about being rude. And we talked the next day and Ryan was like, hey, I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to be rude. I just was pissed off. And I told him, I'm like, honestly, like nights like that, I love more than anything because I don't need your quote. I don't need you to say like, yeah, this was a bad loss. We'll get him tomorrow. Like I love those nights when you can see the emotion on the guy's face and you can see how much that loss meant to him. I didn't need quotes from him. I don't know if I even threw his quotes in my story or even the one word answers in my story. Cause it was just, we had that happen a couple times with Bumgarner where he was pretty good if you wanted to completely shut down an interview. And I think those moments tell you a little bit. Like sometimes you're like, man, this loss stung in the clubhouse more than the rest of them this year. So I appreciate when people are honest and when people, you know, give you their true read on things. And I thought Vogie did. And I absolutely loved covering him. I still, every time I see him, just was an all-time great quote and very, very helpful to the media. But he was intense. And sometimes with the media, you're on the other side of that.
Well, I love a good Vogelsong story. We need to start working like a weekly Vogelsong story into every episode.
I have a few of them. So I think the way Giants fans feel about him, like I think the media probably feels similarly. It was really a lot of fun to cover that story. And he wore his heart on his sleeve on the mound and he did it in the clubhouse too. So you always knew where he stood and I appreciated that.
Real quick, before we get to Dwayne Kuiper, our every week Thursday guest, I want to talk about something we talked about last week, which was how Giants fans aren't really accustomed to booing their returning players. And we've kind of put the question out there because Alex, you and I couldn't think of anyone that we thought Giants fans would get a real rousing, angry boo towards if they stepped foot back in the stadium. Obviously there's Dodgers players, but a guy who's been affiliated with the franchise, we couldn't think, but it turns out we were dead wrong.
Yeah. We're idiots.
They're idiots.
I'm going to blame this on you. Went to a wedding Saturday. I went up to Napa for the weekend and we taped the podcast on Sunday night. And I think Monday morning, probably like, I don't know, 10 minutes after it went live, somebody listened to it and right away went Aubrey Huff. And you and I, we texted each other and we were like, Oh yeah. So there was a lot of that. A lot of people said Aubrey Huff.
I would say 90% of the responses we got via tweets, via texts, via Instagram messages were all Aubrey Huff. So, you know, yeah. I guess Giants fans just aren't in love with that guy.
Oops. We missed that one.
We missed that one. A few of the other ones people mentioned were AJ Pierzynski. We talked about him, but we decided, you know, that would be some playful hate. Disagreed. We got a lot of people still hating AJ Pierzynski, Hunter Strickland, Sam Coonrod. Anyone else you saw?
Yeah, we heard Armando Benitez, who's not around any longer, but that would have been that's a good name. That's just a blast from the past. So that's somebody who's really been through some wars with the Giants, who still is bitter about Benitez. Melky Cabrera is a great one. I don't remember. I don't know if Melky must have come back. That one just kind of floated away. Like, people were mad in the moment, and then the Giants won the title, and they're like, all right, whatever, man. Like, and then a couple interesting ones. Mark Melanson, who we're going to see a lot this year because he's the Padres closer right now. So that'll be interesting to see what the reaction is when he comes back to Oracle.
I think Melanson's a good one. That's probably the most fitting for, like, the prompt I was trying to go for last mm-hmm. episode, because he's a guy who the Giants fans were just mostly disappointed in.
Yeah.
To put it that way. We paid him a lot of money to do one job, and he couldn't really do it well, and he didn't even come out to Limp Bizkit or something cool. I'm gonna give
Giants
Mark Melanson
for disappointment. I don't know if Giants fans will boo for you didn't live up to your contract, but then you got traded.
Zito got booed when he was wearing orange and black.
That's a good point. Melanson's gonna be interesting, because Melanson, I feel, was like disappointment, but also like the whole team was disappointing for a couple years. So that'll be a really interesting one. And then the last one here, somebody brought up Sam Dyson, which was, you know, for his off-field reasons, he's been suspended for the whole year for domestic violence. I don't think we're ever going to see him in the big leagues again. Some of these guys we're not going to see again, but that would be a good one. We will see a couple of these guys this year at Oracle Park, and we will get our answer in person.
Yeah, hopefully we have more than 6,000 fans there to really air them out.
You guys have to give us a good sample size. But somebody we never boo, because we love him every Thursday coming on. You love him your whole life, but I just love talking to him every Thursday. Were you going to boo him? Do you want to boo Dwayne? you probably have at some point in your life. I'm sure he has told you many things that you booed him for. But we always love talking to him, and we'll get into some of what's going on with the team, some of the broadcasting, and then, you know, pretty key injury that they suffered on Wednesday. And here's Dwayne Kuiper to go through all of that.
Dish and Sling customers, don't miss a game this season on NBC Sports Bay Area and NBC Sports California. Don't miss your A's, your Giants, your Kings, your Sharks, your Warriors. To keep watching your favorite teams, go to howtowatchnbcsports.com.
All right, as we do every week now, talking to Dwayne Kuiper. And Dwayne, you've done something since the last time we talked to you that you didn't have to do last year, which is broadcast East Coast day games, which meant 10 a.m. starts. It meant Gabe Kapler's press conference this morning was at 7:45 a.m. What was that like for you? I saw John Miller's Instagram. He was at the park bright and early and capturing some views. But what was it like for you guys being in the ballpark in the morning, especially on the weekend?
Yeah, it's a little different for John, because John's kind of at the mercy of when Gabe can do the KNBR manager show. So if Gabe says, hey, look, I can only do it at 10 o'clock in Philadelphia, which means it's 7 o'clock for John, then John's got to be there at 7. For me, I've been trying to get there a couple of hours before the game. I have never been to our park, Oracle Park, probably before 10 o'clock ever. And this morning I got there at 8. And the other day when we did a game, the Marlins game on Sunday, it was the same thing, 7:30, 8 o'clock. And it's totally different. You walk into the booth and you're used to the way the booth looks as to where the sun is for 1 o'clock games or 6 or 7 o'clock games. For these games, the sun comes directly into the booth. So you have to kind of do your scorecard away from your working area. Otherwise, you get scorched by the sun. That was the first thing I noticed. Other than that, you know, once the game starts, you're doing fine. But usually you don't have to set your alarm at 5:30 in the morning to do a baseball game. But that's really what you kind of have to do.
Is it weird having breakfast with the announcing squad instead of having a hot dog or something for lunch?
Well, you know, Cole, I eat healthy, so I would never have a hot dog for lunch. But what I've been doing is I've been stopping at Whole Foods, and I've been getting burritos for my partners and for Darren Chan. And Whole Foods makes a good breakfast burrito, so It's easy to do. Just stop by. I went today, and the one in Lafayette didn't open until 8 o'clock. So I had to wait to get into the city for the one that's right next to NBC Sports Bay Area, the studios there. And I rolled in at 8 o'clock, got my burritos, and everybody was happy. So that's kind of been the tradition.
But, see, people don't know that it's a big deal for us, and on our end too, having Gabe at 7:45, and at both times he did it, somebody got hurt the night before, so we had to be on the call. You can't sleep in.
That's right, and you know, set your alarm, because it's not something that you can miss. But it has been different, and you know, who knows what's going to happen? Maybe by the All-Star break or after the All-Star break, we'll be back traveling again. But that remains to be seen. It really does.
You also had a 43-minute rain delay across the country when it was beautiful in San Francisco today. And I know they showed our Alyssa Nacken interview on the broadcast during that. If anybody hasn't listened to that, we talked to Alyssa in March. But what did you and Javi do for 43 minutes? Usually we would go back in the press dining room and everybody would see what was still left. But what did you guys do during that time?
Well, you know, it's fortunate that all of us have been vaccinated so that we can, you know, go into one booth and visit, and that's what we did. We went in and saw Dave in the KMBR booth. But you know, you have to figure out how to kill time, either whether you're at the city where it's raining or you're not. And we're not allowed to wander around. I mean, I got to do an update every 10 minutes to let people know if anything has changed in Philadelphia. And inevitably you end up saying the same thing. Tarps on the field. It's still raining. That's all the information we have. Check back with us in 10 minutes. Now let's go back to Giants Talk with their special guest, Alyssa Nacken. So, I mean, basically, that's what you do. You can't wander too far away. Otherwise, my brother, Jeff, loses his mind, and somebody's got to go find us. So I try to stay close. Jeff's got a lot going on. And the easier I make it for him, really the better.
As much as I would like to just sit here and talk about some of my favorite topics, like breakfast burritos and Javier Lopez, we probably do have to talk actual Giants stuff, if that's okay. Solano strained his calf. And one thing, Alex, and I wanted from you while you're here is kind of a second baseman's perspective on what this injury looks like. Did you go anything similar to that during your playing days? And what do you think the next couple of weeks are going to look like for Donovan Solano?
Well, I was really lucky. I never pulled a muscle. And I don't know why. Maybe it was just good fortune. But you see guys doing it now more than you would like, especially running down the first baseline. We saw Gene Segura of the Phillies do literally the same thing. And he was out the last two games. Depth is one thing the Giants have on the infield. So they can survive Solano being out for a little while. You don't want him out for a long time, but they can mix and match while he gets better. The one guy, though, that is going to be hard to replace, and I thought I heard this coming home, it's possible that Crawford might miss a couple of games. Now you got a problem. Because you're going to use your center fielder to fill in for Crawford, which leads me to believe that they would probably call up a shortstop from the minor leagues to fill that gap while Crawford is trying to get better. Because even though you say it's only a couple of days, you don't know. I mean, it could be a week. And I'm not saying Dubon can't fill that spot for a week, but you are using one of your outfielders to play that position, which he's played a lot of. But, you know, I watched Crawford play this whole – every game on this road trip, and he made some plays that I don't know if Dubon can make. And they need him at short. He is the anchor of that infield. So his injury might be a little bit more problematic than Solano's.
Yeah, that one under the radar. He came out of the game. He felt something – I guess underneath his arm, maybe in the oblique rib area. Yeah. So we'll see. on Thursday how he is. When you said we saw Gene Segura, I thought you were going to say we saw Gene Segura get his 200th career double, and that was a big moment for all of us. So I thought that's where you were going with that.
You know, Alex,
I will never forget where I was when I saw Gene Segura's 200th double.
I started to what's the word, to overvalue my stats on doubles, because when he started celebrating, I was like, well, I think I got 200 doubles. And then Javi was looking at the same time I was, and it turned out that I was only short by about 110.
109, you had 91 career doubles.
I had 91. But I did think it was a little odd. And you know, it's like, really, stop the game. You know, get me the ball. You know, if everybody did what Segura did, the games would take 5 hours. Well, that's my 100th intentional walk. Give me the ball, you know. So I thought it was kind of interesting. It gives you an idea what some guys think about, though,
yeah,
where this stuff is really important, that when it's all said and done, you know, when they're my age, they're going to look back at them like back here, and they're going to have 1,000 baseballs back here, and nobody cares.
Yeah.
Nobody cares. Your kids don't even care. Trust me, I got two kids that go, Dad, what are you going to do with that stuff? Seriously, you know?
I'm going to the thrift store.
It's gone. I said, Cole, you're going to take it. He goes, I'm not taking it. So anyway, Segura made it a big deal. I'm happy for him. I
looked it up because people were asking how many people have done it, and Baseball Reference only goes to 1,000. So once it gets past 1,000, it won't even show you the leaderboard. So he was down there around 1,100 somewhere.
That's pretty unbelievable. It really is.
That was, you know, he did that Monday night. It wasn't the best we've seen of Kevin Gausman, but there was something we saw that night. They got three hits. Two of them were cheap hits off of his splitter. But I think people have started to come around, and we saw this. I don't know if you know Mark Simon from Sports Info Solutions. He does great work, sends us a lot of stats. But yes, he looked it up, and Gausman had given up one hit on his splitter since last August 9th. And going through it, was like 12, 13 appearances where he had given up one hit on his splitter. It legitimately was the best pitch in baseball. I think it's a pitch we don't see as much anymore. Was it a pitch that you saw more of in your age? And what do you think of the way he's throwing it right now?
Well, I consider my age the sinker, slider, curveball age, where if somebody threw over 95, it was really a big deal. I didn't see that pitch a lot. You know, that pitch started to come in with Roger Craig, and he taught a lot of his pitchers the split. It was also a pitch where a lot of people said, don't throw it. It's going to eventually hurt your arm. And I don't know if any of that's true, but I do know that Gausman the other night, when he needed outs, when he needed to get strikeouts, and he had those two rooks coming up with, I think, a guy on third in less than two outs, and that's what he did. He went after them with that split, and they really didn't have a chance. He pitched in traffic a lot on Monday, but when he needed to get outs, he did. He got outs, and in some of the plays I was talking about that Crawford made, a lot of those slow choppers that you got to charge and throw on the run, Crawford probably did that two or three times that night to get the final out. But Gausman's been great. He really has. And even though it's a good example, you don't have to have your best stuff, you can still win. And that's exactly what he did Monday.
One thing I really wanted to ask you about is, do you know where Beloit, Wisconsin is?
Say that again, Cole. How'd you
pronounce
it?
Glad you said it, because I didn't know how to pronounce it.
I want to go with Beloit, B-E-L-O-I-T. It's in South Wisconsin, not too far from the Illinois border. But their baseball team, the Beloit Snappers, are auctioning off their ballpark's stadium naming rights. And we wanted to see if you wanted to go in to get maybe like the Beloit Kringle or any other Kuiper-centric name you can toss out there.
Well, we played a lot of games in Beloit. It's not that far from where we grew up on our farm. Yeah, you know what? That's really interesting. You don't happen to know how much it would cost if our family chipped in, do you?
We'll find out.
I can do a little research, but I definitely want to crowdsource some really fantastic names. What are some Wisconsin-centric ballpark names? Like Cheese Stadium, Spotted Cow Park?
Well, I mean, that, you know, you guys from Santa Barbara would like the Spotted Cow Park.
Spotted Cow is one of the best beers I've ever had, and they don't sell it outside that state.
I had to drag a case back from Milwaukee. Do you remember?
You did. I think you brought it onto the team plane. I don't know if you could have gotten through the normal airport with that.
No, I think Brad Grimes carried it on the plane and had to put a blanket over it so none of the players would see it because, you know, they wanted a couple of spotted cows on the plane. I think the Beloit Spotted Cows would be absolutely perfect. And if you're brewing that beer in Wisconsin, why wouldn't you make a bid? Why wouldn't you?
Here's how it's working, Dad. They're going to have a different stadium name every night of their home schedule.
Come on.
For $500, you name the stadium. One night only.
Well,
it's each stadium?
I'll do it.
Yeah, well, that's actually not really a bad one. But you would have to rack your brain. Let's see, a minor league season is probably what? 130 games? So half of that. So you'd have to come up with, you know, what, 60, 70 names? Yeah, that's a lot.
The team president gave an example. He said, say you want to propose to your girlfriend. Why don't you propose to her at Will You Marry Me, Jessica Ballpark?
It sounds like a perfect way to really bring out people in these small minor league towns because you can do whatever you want in these minor league towns. I mean, what have they done in San Jose? What is it, the beer batter inning? They have that?
The beer batter. I went down there a couple years ago.
People would start throwing stuff on the field in a big league park if you did that.
It's a big deal.
So in the minor leagues, let it go. Let it rip. Have some fun. And by the way, the Spotted Cow, Cole, you brought up such a – I think the Indians should name – it's the Cleveland Spotted Cows.
Yeah.
Where they have nothing to do with Ohio, just do it.
Another minor league thing I read recently was there's a minor league team that's going to be going by the team name the Honey Butter Chicken Biscuits once a week. And, you know, Alex and I know all about the 199 Honey Butter Chicken Biscuit around these parts.
Yeah, are they any good?
A lot of food talk. It's making me hungry.
Well,
they are very good.
When are we going to see Alec Eats? Come on.
I think this weekend. I'm not sure. It gets edited, that's the answer. Yeah. But final question for you is something that, as usual, something you said on the broadcast that my ear kind of perked up a little bit. And I thought maybe there's a funny story behind it. But Bryce Harper was on first base, and Harleen Garcia kept throwing over and throwing over and throwing over. Harper's like 18 inches away from the bag. Didn't even have to move, basically. He was stepping back.
Stop throwing over.
Yeah. And you said, I think you said something about how you one time told a first baseman, I'm not going anywhere. But you actually had three seasons with double-digit stolen bases. So I'm not sure if that would have gone over.
Well, I mean, after I hurt my leg, I wasn't going to run anymore. And you get in situations in games where it's 9-0. You're either winning or losing, and you're not going to run. You're not going to run out of respect to the other team, but the guy keeps throwing over there. It's like, what are you doing? Just tell him I'm not going. And, you know, sometimes the first baseman would go out of the mound and say something, and I don't even know if he had any idea whether he said that to the pitcher or not. But you know, there was some talk about only allowing so many throws to first, which would be a great idea. But after, let's say you're only allowed two throws. Well, after that, what? I mean, you can just get 30 feet off the bag, you know? And so I don't know if you can do that. But I do think there's some common sense as to when you throw over there or not. And what Garcia was doing the other day to, you could tell it was ticking Harper off. I mean, he's like, I'm not going. Yeah. You know, he's like, had it. You're wasting time. You're slowing up the game. There's a rhythm, and the rhythm of the game is not throwing to first when a guy's not running. So, if my tone, Alex, caught your attention that I was not happy about it. So you were right.
I can tell you're fired up. A former infielder doesn't want to stand out there.
Yeah, no, and like, stop. I'm not going. So anyway, by the way,
I agree with you.
You know, you were very kind to talk about double digits and steals. And I feel like I can say this about myself rather than somebody else. I think I'm one of the few guys that got caught stealing more than they stole bases.
You, I didn't read off your full numbers. So
I think I got caught. And I always blame it on hitting runs where the hitter didn't swing.
Yeah. So I did notice that. There was a couple was seasons in there. There was one season with 19 stolen bases. I won't say how many caught stealing, but it was less than 19.
Yeah.
Well, so there you go.
When I got to the big leagues, the Giants had a player by the name of John Lowenstein. And you know, and he was a good little player, Steiner. And I got there, he had 43 stolen bases. And one of the coaches said, you know, you're stealing bases in the minor leagues. I want you to talk to John Lowenstein and find out what his secret is to stealing second base. I said, all right. So I went up to Steiner and I said, Steiner, I said, give me the secret. He goes, well, don't tell anybody this, but I guess. I just guessed that he's throwing home. And 43 times he was right and 20 times he was wrong. So I tried it. It doesn't work because if you're unlucky, you're going to get thrown out like 9 times in a row. But at least Steiner was honest with me. He didn't give me one of these, well, the pitcher lifts up his leg and he leans and then you go. He said, no, just guess. It might work.
It worked for Steiner. Dwayne, always a pleasure to talk to you. Hey, Javi was fantastic, but I assume Mike's back on Thursday. So,
yeah, Mike is back. And I thought the one thing that Javi did is I think his personality is starting to come out where you know his personality. Cole, you don't know it as much as Alex, but he's really funny. He's dry, and he doesn't miss anything. He sees everything on the field. And I thought he really relaxed. And I didn't have to draw anything out from him. He brought it out himself. And I thought that was pretty evident that he had a lot of fun.
Well, I will say my wife is much more likely to watch the Giants game when Javi's in the booth than when you and Mike are in the booth.
And I always thought that she did it because of her father-in-law. Not true.
Yeah, that home run that the guy flipped over the seats, Javi not only saw it right away and kind of gasped, but then his belt's rounding the bases. He let some shaft out on that one. This is rounding third. So he was all over that whole thing. He did a great job.
Yeah. And the way he talks about Sparky just makes me laugh.
It is good.
Cause he really does like Belt, and he has figured Belt out, to a core. So he was great. Mike, I get Mike for the next 7 games. And then I think I get Randy Wynn when the Giants go play the Rockies. So that'll be good.
All right. Well, the group's back together. Dwayne, we'll see you next Thursday.
All right, guys.